Lakeland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Hour two on this Wednesday, after the just banner sale. We'll talk a little bit more about the sale and its ramifications with Sid Fernando in a little bit, and then Jay Privman with yet another gang that couldn't shoot straight moment. For those of you that remember the wonderful Jimmy Breslin comic novel. In this case, we're talking CHRB. Right now, though, Dick Powell joins us. Good morning.
Steve, good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. I haven't been at the track as much as I would like, but maybe that can change.
Well, I'm going to guess that by the time you know, with the second half here, this morning for the first time, when I went out to feed the cats, there's the cats and there's the two twin baby skunks that, I'm telling you, it's wild kingdom around here. The other night, Tina and I came back and she'll pull the car into the driveway. I get out. She gives me the house keys. I'll go into the house because she's going to back her RAV4 into the garage. So she does that, and I hear her, like, 2 seconds later as I'm in the house, I hear her, like, Steven. And so I'm like, what's going on? One of the two baby skunks was following me up the stairs into the house. And she said the door closed. He was just getting to the second stair, and he literally was bounding up the stairs to follow me into the house.
Oh,
shit. They are so cute. There's one that's really shy, and there's one that's really bold. I mean, there's one that's... And they're not just nocturnal. The one is out all the time. I'll go out on the porch, and he's in the cat dish, you know, eating the dry food. It's pretty funny. And they are, I mean, if they didn't have, you know, they didn't have the odor issue, and they haven't sprayed, neither one of them have sprayed, but we have had baby skunks every year for like the last 5 years.
Well, we've had skunks and they're not babies, and our dogs would pick them up and like Bella would have one in her mouth and just like not killing it, you know, and get sprayed. And the only good thing is once they spray, they can't spray for another couple of weeks. So they're kind of judicious when they spray. And but when they do, it's a mess. And especially when we had Akitas, it's hard to get out of that coat. Especially, you know, in the face and everything else. So,
well, we have not had an incident, and the cats seem to like them. There was the other morning. We have our fourth cat, the one we got from Vermont, Kirby, and he's sort of a chucker cat, and he came up the stairs for breakfast and was face to face with the skunk, and the skunk's tail went up, and Kirby's back and tail went up, and they were like, oh, who are you, what are you, and Kirby stepped aside, and he let the skunk, you know, go under the porch. We've also got possums. We've got possums that come and eat the cat food. Of course they're terrific, because they're eating up all the Lyme disease ticks. So possums are welcome, and we haven't seen the raccoon of late. There's been a raccoon, but we have not seen him.
Well, we have Lyme disease ticks because we have deer.
Yep.
And when I mow, it's bad because it gets blown. Everything gets blown all over the place. And then with the animals, you know, they get on the animals and come in the house. And I've had to go get them removed and get the deck shot and all that. So, yeah. Life is good.
It's fun. It's... You know, life in the country. There are, to quote, I think it's Peter in Mad Men. There's lots of varmints. That's one part of the life out here. But I find it charming. Dick, not so charming. The handiwork going up in the steward stand. Andy did not want to talk about this yesterday. He's obviously exasperated, and it gets discussed ad infinitum on Twitter, so it makes everybody crazy. You got some insight? Then we can roll this around one more time.
Well, let me jump ahead to Sunday, where Peace of My Heart breaks out of the gate, breaks directly left from the outside post, crashes into the 6 and 5, knocks the 5 Liberty MD basically out of the race, and finishes third. And there's this long, like, what is going on period. They never really flashed any numbers. They did not make the race official. Then finally, it was announced there was an inquiry into the start of the race. So I was watching America's Day at the Races in real time. I went back to YouTube and rewatched that to make sure I heard what Paul and Richie and Greg had said. And then I went back to the NYRA replays, which are on the NYRA YouTube, NYRA Now, where I can go back and watch replays, and that stayed with it. So it was a good 10 minutes before anything was done, and it was never really explained. See, my problem is, first of all, I do not think Peace of My Heart broke the gate. Did he get a perfect start? Yes. But it wasn't, you know, he had an unfair advantage. It looked like a makeup call for not having the guts to take down a horse who wipes out half the field coming out of the gate. Not that Pratt had any control over the horse, but if it happened, it happened, whether Flavian had anything to do with it or not. So now they take the seven down. Stewart's Inking Piece of My Heart was disqualified from third place last for breaking open the front of her stall doors prior to the rest of the field. And also, all times were unavailable due to a timing issue. So when you go back and watch it, here's Chad, who's looking at the ballerina as a possibility for Goodnight Olive. And he's down in the winner's circle, and Acacia's interviewing him, and he's looking out. And what is he seeing on the clock? 1:20 3/5 for 6.5 furlongs. Well, he's not going to the ballerina if his filly just ran 1:20 3/5. So the it was obviously wrong because the first quarter was 26 seconds. So the corrected time is 1:17 and change. So maybe she will go. But it's just a total lack of communication. First of all, what are you doing? And could you, like, inform us as to what you're doing? No. And just, you know, if you're at the track, you have no idea what's going on. I have people calling me if they know I'm home asking me what's going on because they're at the track. They have no idea what's going on. So it was, I didn't think she broke the gate. I think she kind of gathered herself up and just hit it perfectly. And the problem was it wasn't breaking the gate. It was what she did to the horses inside of her. So it almost looked like a makeup call. Okay, fine. But it's like, can you just tell us what's going on better than what they did? Because they did just a horrible job with that. And here we have stewards that are running around like Barney Fife, finding people all over the track.
Yep.
And yet they're bulletproof. No one finds them. So here we have, once again, who's looking out for the betters? Well, the answer is clearly nobody, including Hissa. So now go back to Saturday. And there's a multi-layered on Whitney. Todd made a statement before the race that the track was good sealed, and the Whitney's going to be the last dirt race of the day because the next two are on the turf. And they harrowed the track. And Todd, like, kind of questioned that. He's like, you know, the track had been sealed, it's wet. I don't know why they harrowed it. And he's, you know, he has a horse that might have some distance limitations, some stamina limitations. So Irad does a brilliant job in keeping him off the rail, keeping him relaxed, not running the risk of being pinned down there and someone pulling up next to him. So if someone's going to go up and challenge, which nobody did, he'd have all the room in the world to maneuver. So turn for home. Irad does this thing like he did in the Preakness, like he does seemingly every day. He ducks in $1 million race. Johnny on Happy Saver has to alter course. Was he clear? Yes. Was it a foul? No. Was it reckless and dangerous? Yes. And was it unnecessary? Absolutely. And now here's some of the other layers. Both horses, Life is Good, second place horse, Happy Saver, trained by Todd Pletcher. And one of the things I screamed at the stewards when I spoke before them I was invited by the University of Louisville Equine Program and the Steward Accreditation Program, that you have to let us know what's going on. And you cannot depend on the rider to claim foul, because in today's world, there are so many conflicts with agents having multiple riders, with trainers having gigantic stables and runners all over the place, with overlapping ownership partners. You just can't expect the jock to say, I'm going to claim against my meal ticket, or a guy who used to be my meal ticket, or a guy, I wish he were my meal ticket. So Johnny's not going to claim foul, and Johnny shouldn't have claimed foul because he really wasn't fouled. But here you have, and I'm not advocating for coupled entries. I am against coupled entries. But at the same time, the stewards have to flash the inquiry and not wait on the jocks to claim foul, because they don't always do. And I gave two examples that year. One was the Cotillion where, what was it, Midnight Diesel, someone bore
yes,
out.
Yes.
And if you go back and watch that, there was no steward's inquiry. That was generated by a claim of foul. My question is, what if the jock doesn't claim foul? And they had no answer. In their minds, they seemed like, okay, well, we don't have to file a foul claim and do the paperwork and whatever it is. I mean, I don't know, but it was just, it's so, I don't know what the word is. Well, I can't use the word that I want to use.
You can.
Does anyone care? Does anyone pay attention? And why can't we get not only rulings with some meat on them, in other words, tell us exactly what happened, but what was the vote? Was it 3-0? Was it 2-1? Who voted the 2? Who voted the 1? Well, what is so hard about doing that? Well, they don't want to do that. And they never will until they're forced to, which at least Hisser could possibly, you know, do something about that. So we have a million-dollar race, and we're talking about some shenanigans in the last 100 yards when we should be talking about life is good, wind's going a mile late, look pretty good doing it, time is slow, but the track is very, very deep this year. It's been deep from day one. So there's so much cushion on the track that even when it gets wet and sealed, it doesn't really speed up the running times. And I still have questions about life is good getting a mile and a quarter. I think he'd get a mile and 3/16 based on Saturday's race. But I went back, Steve, and looked at Gunrunner. And Gunrunner, obviously, you know, last night, Gunrunner, not only winning on the track, but winning in the sales ring. Kentucky Derby, third, beaten 4 1/4. Travis, third, beaten 15 lengths. Dubai World Cup, second, beaten 2 1/4 lengths. All of these are a mile and a quarter. And then Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar. Gunrunner did win, Gate to Wire, going a mile and a quarter. Now, is life as good on that same trajectory? I have my doubts. And I will bet against him at a mile and a quarter. I think Keeneland sometimes can be pretty speed favorite. Mm. Witness Authentic, and you know, sometimes that track gets pretty fast. But I just don't think Life is Good is a mile and a quarter horse. I don't think Saturday's race answered any real questions other than, to his credit, he didn't do it over a racetrack like Monmouth was on Haskell Day, where they're going 46 and change for mile 8. I mean, he did 48.97 and was, I'd be curious to see what Jerry Brown gives him when you take ground loss into account, because he was nowhere near the rail. And until Irad wanted to go over and visit the rail, because someone else seemed to want to go to the rail also. So it was a big race for Life is Good. I still not convinced he's a mile and a quarter horse. I don't know if Todd's convinced he's a mile and a quarter horse. And then they have a decision to make. All right, do we go mile and a quarter and run that risk, especially Sienna? We'll see how Flightline does in a Pacific Classic. Or do we drop back to the Breeders' Cup mile? Or do we kind of play a different game and wait for the Saudi Cup at a mile and an eighth, one term mile and eighth for $20 million? That does interfere a little bit with the stud season, but you know that they have a lot of decisions to make, including where do you prep if you're going to have a prep for the Breeders' Cup? You going to prep at Aqueduct? The Woodward down at Aqueduct?
Yeah.
Maybe. I even thought, if I was talking to someone the other day, I'm thinking, how about Windstar? Windstar has a big training center not that far from Keeneland. You know, take them there for a while and then ship them to Keeneland and, you know, train them there. Well, I'm not telling Todd how to train the horse, but if he gets a mile and a quarter, he showed Saturday he can relax beautifully. He's certainly not headstrong or anything like that. And then, you know, I think he'll come close. but I don't know if he can get the mile and a quarter. Whereas Gunrunner had already tried it three times, had dominated his mile and eighth races, the Whitney, the Woodward, the Foster. He won by open lengths. And but it was interesting watching all this, and then seeing the next day that fiasco, and just the lack of communications. What is so hard about not only telling us the bettors, but having some statement that John Embriel can read, and maybe passing it along to the people on the TV set so that they can communicate to the bettors with some real knowledge, instead of, you know, unfortunately, Sunday, Richie and Paul were basically guessing as to what was going on, because they hadn't been informed as to what was going on, and it was taking a really long time before a decision was made, and then the decision was not really explained very well.
Now, this is an ongoing problem, and there's some jurisdictions that are, you know, working hard to address it, and you know, presenting the specifics of the decisions. You know, the other thing that you alluded to, by the way, is the timing, the timing issues that just are bedeviling. It's not limited by any means to New York. I mean, this is a problem industry-wide, and it's an eyesore and really a source of frustration, consternation, annoyance. There's nothing more important in this game than time. And the fact that that this drags out and drags on, and I know that they're trying, the various entities are trying to figure it out, whether it's the GMAC system or, you know, whatever Beam systems are being updated and refreshed. We've had these conversations. But it is just, you just slump your shoulders and you put your head in your hands, I mean, after a while.
Well, and there was a false connection to the time of the race and the alleged false start. Well, number one, if she did break ahead, if she did bust the gate open, it was a split second. Number two, more importantly, these races are not automatically timed. These races, timer does not begin when the starter presses the button, as they are in some other countries. That this is done differently over here, and it's more manual as far as the hitting the timing pole. So whether she broke the gate or not should have nothing to do with posting a 26-second first quarter, especially going 6.5 furlongs, where we almost always see sub-22 first quarters because of the long run-up, because of where they have to put the gate with the turn and the gap and all that stuff. So, yeah, you knew something was wrong. But I just got a kick out of Chad looking out on the infield. 1:20. the timing is an issue. It's always been an issue. But the fact that it continues to be an issue is not very heartening, especially on big days and big races and things like that. I've been keeping track of a lot of things during the meet, and the test stakes was maybe the third slowest running in the last 50 years, so you can't hold that against the winner or anything else like that. I thought Saturday, Disarm, the gun runner from Askerson, was absolutely brilliant in his race, going 7:124.51 on a track that's, number one, not yielding those kind of times. Number two, he did it from the rail, so he had to drop back and kind of circle. And then Luis Saez getting croupy. I mean, at one point, it looked like the Pletcher entry was going to be last and second last. And then here comes Louis getting croupy, motivated, and he comes flying through the lane, just missed second. He's a curling, so you got the gun runner winning and the curling finishing full of run, and it'll be interesting to see way he goes and what distances he's going to, obviously he's going to run longer than 7 furlongs. But he was impressive, but DeSalm was as good a two-year-old as we've seen it to me, because he just did it so professionally. I know he had the advantage of a race, and that's big. Here's another one. Thanks, Steve. I heard, I can't remember who, one of the out-of-town trainers talking about getting a race over the track, and he mentioned about how big an advantage the horses locally have because they get to train over it. And yet, when you examine it, most of our horses are not necessarily training over the track that they're racing on in the afternoon. I mean, many do. But a good portion of them are still training at Oklahoma.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt.
And we used to have this big dichotomy between fast Saratoga main track and deep slow Oklahoma. So a horse comes out of Oklahoma and it's working, you know, 51.5. There's nothing wrong with that. And that kind of changed over the years, and the Oklahoma times are a little bit faster. Usually the rider's not asking for speed. But the Saratoga main track this year is right now, I would say, historically slow. And I, no problem with it. If it's safe, it's good. It's all right with me. And it has been consistently slow. So there aren't days where suddenly it has outrageous running times and then it's back to being slowish. It's been slowish for the entire meet. So it was an interesting Whitney, and me screaming at the TV has... You would think I was at the racetrack screaming at
that's
the TV.
Good. That's good. I like it. What did you make? We had Nick Luck on Monday and then I don't know if you heard Andy's comments yesterday about the Saratoga Derby and Oaks, and you know the kind of investment that's involved in them, and you know, nice to have Appleby and you know Will Buick come over. Andy was of the opinion it you know was a little maybe a subpar pair of runnings. Some thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't agree with the investment. I think that would have come if the Derby was $500,000. As long as it's Grade One, they would have been here. They don't ship their top horses anyway. And I never was in favor of throwing $1 million purses around for these type horses. Just don't agree with it. And this is one of Dick Powell's pet peeves, and believe me, I'm in a minority of one, maybe two. How do you run a $1 million turf race for 3-year-olds with I don't know, not the greatest turf horses in the world, and you still run the Alabama at $750,000? The Alabama, if any race should be $1 million,
that's true.
The Alabama.
That's true.
And I've never agreed with that. But that's what happened when the board of directors of the New York Racing Association hired a guy to run the track that knew nothing about racing. And then he went out and hired a guy from California who knew very little about the history and tradition of New York racing. Now, that's not true anymore, but hello, it can be fixed. We could be announcing this fall, the Met Miles going back to Memorial Day. We could be announcing, you know, the Alabamas. I mean, you know, just this lot of things that you can't undo.
That's fair. That's fair. But that's a good point about the Alabama. And, I mean, just look at the way the Cotillion, how its profile has been raised. By purse size.
Yes, and it's one of the great races in the world, and just to have, okay, if you can't run $1 million, can't run $1 million. But then when you have these other horses, you know, $1 million races, that's where I can't accept it.
Yeah, allocation.
So I'm
allocation of resources.
Yeah, I'm barking in the wind at that one, but I will continue to bark.
Dick, a couple of thoughts, too. We've got the week starts out with the furthest placement of the temporary rails. And we're now out, we started at 9, then 18, now 27 feet. Anything, this is one of your wheelhouse specialties. What do we look for? Any changes in how the turf courses play with the rails coming out a little further?
They desperately need it. That turf course has been chewed up beyond recognition. On the Mellon, which is the wider course, the 27 feet normally affects the wide closes. Then it helps the horses closing widest because the turn is even kinder. The circumference of the turn is greater. So that said, one issue that we have at Saratoga with all the, I'll use the word plethora, of turf sprints, which I like, takes away two-turn Mellon turf races. We have very few of them. We have tons on the inner, obviously, because we're not running sprints on the inner. So what we have is most of our two-turn races are on the inner, and I always liked as a handicapper kind of getting a horse that might have ran one race on the inner and now it's getting on a Mellon or vice versa. We don't get that as much. So if you had a two-turn mile 16th, mile 8th on the Mellon, I would be looking at a wide closer because I think that horse is going to have less of an issue than it would have if they were doing the extreme of running on a hedge. So 27 feet is pretty far. I don't know offhand what that does to field size, whether they can run 10, or I doubt if they can run 12. You know, it does narrow the course, but the course is pretty wide to begin with. But it's just, it's tough. And then with the inner, if you move that rail out to 27 feet, now you're racing on the part where some of those horses on the inner, not on the inside part of the rail, but a little farther out, are racing where the jump races are. And you got to remember, the jump races go around twice, so that's like two inner turf course races. So I once explained all this to somebody, and the results were remarkable. I can't really say what they were, but I actually talked to someone who's pretty high up and explained all this stuff. And next thing you know, some decisions had been made. I hate to leave it at that. I'm not being cryptic or stupid or anything, but that's I might be being stupid, but definitely being cryptic. So 27 feet. We got to do it because, man, we've according to my records, we've only had 5 off the turf races.
Yeah.
So the turf course is just getting used and used and used. And okay, great. But then when you watch the races and you see all that dirt getting kicked up, and I see a couple of horses slipping on the turn a little bit. So now you got to get out and you got to let that inside 27 feet recover and be safer when they go back and run over it. So, and that one thing I wish racing could do, Steve, I don't have the answer for this, but maybe one of these companies like Duraloc or someone can come up with a rail that can be moved in quicker time. In other words, I could run the races at 27 feet, and then Saturday I have a big stake race on the turf, and I can run it on the hedge and then go right back Sunday to 27 feet. I know it's a big task to do, the big turf courses, it's a lot of manpower, you want it to be accurate, you got a lot of stuff that you have to worry about doing it. But if there were a way of doing that, that I think would have great benefit.
You got to get. They got to figure out a way to do what they do on suspension bridges, on big bridges, with that unit that picks up the Jersey barriers. Those, right? The snaky Jersey barriers. You know who?
He doesn't pick them up. I remember seeing it on the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Right.
And the truck is coming at you, and he's like pushing them into the lane they now want them to be.
Right. Right.
So yeah, that yes.
This is a
something
job
like that.
Wait a minute, I got the right guy for this. This is a job for Happy Alter, isn't it? Isn't that one of his business successes? Barriers? Jersey Barriers? I think that's where Happy made his money.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it was the actual Jersey Barriers or if it, which is a sort of a brand name, the kind of the Kleenex of barriers. but I'm pretty sure that... Is it Happy and his brother or Happy and his partner? Anyway, yeah, somebody out there knows the answer to this.
Well, we make our barriers out of precast concrete. They weigh obviously a lot. And Americans tend to be kind of sheepish. Put a barrier up, we respect it. My wife and I were in France, and there was a barrier blocking this exit from the highway. And the cars had all come to a stop, and people got out of the car, and they just picked up the plastic yellow barriers and moved them out of the way so that you could get off the exit.
You know what?
Number one.
You just said the magic word, actually. It's Bob's Barriers, I think, is what Happy's barrier business is. Bob's Barriers. I'm pretty sure.
Well, in France, they did not respect the barrier. They're going to move it. I'm thinking, are we going off a cliff? Is there a giant sinkhole? You know, the barrier might be there for a reason. But nope, they got out of their cars and moved the barrier, and we proceeded wherever we wanted to go. We're in a van. We weren't driving. But, yeah, that was a little culture shock on that one.
Well, here you go, by the way. It's Bob's Barricades. Bob's Barricades has been...
Ooh, I like barricades.
Bob's Barricades has been providing temporary traffic control since 1975 under the same ownership of Happy Alter.
All right, so we had Bob's Barricades and Jolie's Halo.
I love it. Dick, this was fun. I got so much to do in this half hour. I got to get Jay Pribman and Sid Fernando yet. And then Bill Gallo's going to join us. We got some very tough news regarding Skip Acuff, who's in hospice care. And we're going to send out a tribute to him. He'd love to hear from stakeholders and everybody around the racetrack. So Bill Gallo later, as well as Seth Merrill. Dick, we will see you out there sooner than later.
Oh, definitely this weekend. I'm just not sure which days and how long I'll be there, but yeah, I'll be over.
Very good. Dick Powell, everybody.
All right, Steve.
Thanks so much. Dick Powell, folks. Let me quickly bring Jay Pribman in here and Sid. I know Sid's listening, and I'm asking for his understanding because we got it's a size nine show in a size eight shoe. So to speak. So we're going to have Jay Pribman join us, and I think he joins us now. Jay, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. I would love to go, Jay, a season, a week, 3 days without something falling out of the sky like a house from Kansas landing on my sister. It's unbelievable.
It is. I assume you're referring to the CHRB thing?
CHRB, timing of races, steward inconsistencies. It's one fiasco, hitting the stop bet button on time. When you're trying to paint a happy picture, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard when...
Well, the good thing is these things are all going to get ironed out at the Jockey Club Roundtable.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean,
yep.
I think the timing of race is one of the, you know, which is obviously something that's affecting racing nationwide over the last couple of years. since the Jockey Club put in a, you know, or a new timing type system at a lot of racetracks, I think it was really nice of them to make sure that they covered that at the round table. Who am I kidding? No. That would be too important to discuss for horse players. So, no.
Yeah, not on the agenda. And for those of you that are looking forward to watching the simulcast of it, 10:30, I believe, usually on Sunday, is the roundtable on pertaining to issues on racing and so forth. We'll certainly get to that. And as it happens, Monday after, the morning after, Tom Rooney is going to sit in with me live at the track on Monday, and we'll get Tom's thoughts and reaction, the still fairly newly minted NTRA chief executive. But, Jay, this thing came out of left field on Monday evening. There I was enjoying the sale results, and you used a very appropriate name of a horse, the pre-named Jane Lyon horse, Stop the Press, as a excellent segue to this CHRB missive. Explain to everybody what transpired, the timing, and the ramifications.
So what transpired was earlier Monday, the CHRB put out a statement saying that as of August 31st, it was going to require all media members who regularly cover racing to have a license, and that they would need to be, you know, basically treated like backstretch personnel who were under the purview of the CHRB. And that would require being fingerprinted and paying a fee to go to the backside. It's a wholly objectionable notion, owing to an abridgment of press freedom to require something, anything close to that. But more significantly, Steve, the deceitful way in which this was done is incredibly odious and distasteful, because even if the CHRB thought that there was a problem that needed to be addressed, and what they have cited in press reports, and what I was told as well, is that supposedly there was some former exercise rider who had an exercise rider license who is now working in some media capacity, but was desirous of getting an exercise rider's license to go to the backside. I don't know the specifics of all that story. That's, again, all according to the CHRB. But let's say, just for argument's sake, that in this specific case, the CHRB is actually telling the truth. Deal with that one person and iron that thing out and say, look, if you're going to be an exercise rider, you can get an exercise rider license. If you're not going to be an exercise rider, get credentialed through the media department at the track and go forward from there. That seems like a fairly easy and reasonable solution if that was indeed the problem. Instead, an edict came out saying that all media members who regularly cover racing would have to be licensed, and that those who infrequently, and that's an undefined length of time, I don't know if it means once a week, once a month, or once a year, but if you infrequently cover racing, you wouldn't have to get licensed. You would have to go through the media department of the CHRB, and you would be signed in on the backside on the days that you wanted to go there. So that's what came out on Monday. Yesterday, both the National Turf Riders and Broadcasters Association, and more importantly and significantly, the Associated Press sports editors sent sharply worded letters to the CHRB explaining why this is completely out of bounds. And to me, the most significant aspect of this, and this is where the deceit comes in, and I don't use that word lightly, but this is deceitful. The CHRB and their edict and then follow-up stuff used a snippet from a rule that says that people who are on the backside need to have a license. But that's only one part of what that whole rule reads. If you read the entire rule, it goes on to list all the different types of people who need to have licenses to be on the backside. There is zero mention of media. So the claim from the CHRB that this is some sort of a rule that's been on the books that just hasn't been enforced is a lie. And again, I'm not using that word lightly, but that's a lie. It has not been on the books. And for Scott Cheney, the executive director of the CHRB, and his head of security to have put this forth is completely out of bounds, because they're basing it on a supposed rule that in fact does not exist. So they've completely made this up as they go along. And now, again, here we are with another unforced error from the CHRB, added to the long list of unforced errors. This was completely avoidable. It was completely unnecessary. It's grossly distasteful, and they've rightly gotten creamed for the last 48 hours over this. And it's not just racing reporters who are impacted by this. As I mentioned a moment ago, the Associated Press sports editors weighed in on this as well. It's my understanding that none of the regular horse racing board commissioners were even consulted on this. It was just, you know, by fiat. And I would really hope they would take a long look as to at how that came down, why it came down, and act appropriately. It's disgusting.
You mentioned the reaction, and we should probably at least address, Jay, some of the people that seem to not be able to parse out the difference between media activity and the, you know, the requirement of an independent journalistic free hand versus people that are regulated, you know, traditionally by state agencies and by the regulatory bodies. There seems to be a certain percentage of people out there that are like, oh, well, why is this so objectionable? Explain why it's so objectionable from the perspective of a media organization that may need to be critical of the regulatory body.
Right. So the very first amendment to the Constitution relates to free press. It's the first one, kind of important. It says that, you know, Congress shall have no laws abridging press freedom, et cetera. So we'll start with that and then widen out from there. The reason that this is so objectionable, if in fact it was going to go through, I'd hope to God, after what happened and the reaction that it got, the understandable reaction that it got from sane-minded people, I would hope the CHRB would come to their senses on this quickly. But to answer your question, you know, the reason it's so distasteful if they tried to do something like this is you would basically be setting up a mechanism whereby media members would have to be licensed by the body that they are covering and be subject to the sanctions of that body in order to cover it. And there's no definition as to what sanctions would be. You know, this was done obviously in great haste without any thought and with any lack of foresight. There's nothing equivalent, and rightly so, with any other sport, let alone if someone was covering City Hall or the police beat. You don't have to get fingerprinted and licensed to cover the LAPD or the San Diego Police Department or the FBI or whatever, you know, important, the White House or the Supreme Court. You know, it's utterly ridiculous. And then to widen out even further from there, you know, under the way the HISA rules are written, it says that covered persons must register with HISA, and anybody who has a license by definition becomes a covered person. Now, I know that Lisa Lazarus has said that there's no intention of HISA to enforce this if it were to go through, but the wider implication of this is that not only would the CHRB, if this thing goes through, would be licensing people who are covering them, but then those people would have to register with HISA, and which is overseeing the entire sport. So for a sport that already suffers from a credibility standpoint in terms of journalism, where people think that, you know, you're in the bag for different people or different organizations, this certainly wouldn't help in that regard. But not only, but irrespective of that, it's just wholly illegal to even have something like this from a press freedom standpoint. It just doesn't stand on its own merits. And I go back to what I said a few moments ago. If you go by the CHRB's own rules, it's not applicable. And they've literally made this up as they go along. And I think it's extremely disturbing that the California Horse Racing Board's, the people in charge there, can't read and can't follow their own rules. That's disturbing on a wider level, not just for journalists who would be impacted by this if it went through. It's disturbing for anybody who holds a CHRB license that the CHRB seems so cavalier about their own rules.
And wouldn't this normally, or because I can't sit through those monthly meetings. Shouldn't there be a presentation and a comment period and, you know, if they were going to float something like this?
Correct. If they wanted to add the rule to it, that would be the appropriate way to do this. But, you know, they tried to make it appear, as I was mentioning a few moments ago, they tried to make it appear as though this is some rule that's been on the books that has just not been enforced. And that is, in fact, a lie, because the rule states all the different occupations that need a license, and media members are not listed. So they tried to make it seem as though, oh, this has been on the books and we just haven't enforced it. It's time to follow the letter of the law. That is not the case whatsoever.
You mentioned the turf writers and broadcasters complaint and the editors' complaint. I imagine the Daily Racing Form, TDN and Bloodhorse. And Jay, I mean, do you have a feel? I mentioned you and Steve Anderson and Brad Free. I mean, you three, tromp the backstretch and the racetracks of Southern California. Who do you think would be affected by this? Is there a definition on that yet, or is there going to be, or is this going to just rightly disappear?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the CHRB if this is going to rightly disappear. It should rightly disappear. To answer your question as to, you know, who is regular and who's infrequent, I mean, again, those are things that were not defined. Steve, Brad, and I are regular people who trudge the backside, for instance, during the Del Mar meeting. There are other media members who are back there on a fairly regular basis. For instance, during the Del Mar meet, TVG frequently has reporters and camera people on the backside early in the day, for instance, reporting from back there on horses that might have worked or going to be racing that afternoon. But again, I said this a few minutes ago at the top, you know, what infrequent means is not defined. If somebody comes out once a week, is that good enough for them to not have to be licensed? And just so people know, there's already a mechanism for controlling who goes to the backside. It's not like it's a complete free-for-all. The media credential that I have from Del Mar, for instance, is something I have to wear around my neck. I have to show it before I go into the backside. Every entry point to the backside, and there's about four or five of them, is staffed by a security guard, and I have to show that security guard my credential, which has my photo on it, it has my name on it, and it has my affiliation on it. So they can see that it's a valid a media credential, and it allows me onto the backside. It's not like I just walk back there unannounced and it's a free-for-all back there. So that's, again, another reason why this step that the CHRB is attempting to make is unnecessary. There's already identification needed for media members to enter the stable area.
And that's what's so odd about this is that they're the racetrack property. I suppose there's some of those issues that can also interface into this. And the fact, do you know if at all any racetrack management, the organizations Del Mar and Santa Anita Management and LoSalle, were any inquiry made or any interface with them?
I'm not aware of anything like that. As far as I know, this was all done by basically two people who took supposedly, a one-off incident involving a former exercise rider and, turned it from a molehill into a mountain.
Just hearing from Jay, another Jay in Carlsbad, and he brings up, for instance, the next year's Santa Anita Breeders' Cup. How would that be handled? And this is just so unnecessary, and yet another embarrassment.
Yeah, it's an unforced error. It didn't need to happen. And, for an organization that's had a lot of issues over the years with credibility, this certainly, doesn't help. And I'd really hope that the commissioners take a long look at how all this went down and ask serious questions about the competency of the people who were behind this. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And regarding the organization, one of my favorite expressions, when you're walking on eggshells, don't hop.
Right, exactly.
Jay, we will save the racing conversation for Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday. You meant Friday, right?
I meant Friday. Today's Wednesday. Good point. There was I thought you really had a nice point made about the past weekend with Marcelo Polanco and Dean Peterson. It's good for the sport when, when big races go in the direction of the smaller outfits. And George,
yeah, I mean, three of the four stakes were won by guys with small barns,
yeah,
including Rafael De Leon on Sunday. And I wrote that, between De Leon and Peterson and Polanco, you add up all the horses in their care, you wouldn't even fill up a 32-stall barn. But they won three of the four races. And, this is an era where we've seen trainers get really oversized in terms of the numbers of horses they carry compared to, when I first came around, Steve, you got 32 stalls and that was it. But it shows that there are people out there who can do the job if they have the stock and they just need a chance.
Yeah.
Not every trainer is as good as every other trainer, but there are a lot of trainers who are very good who don't get the kinds of chances that they deserve. And it's nice to see, let's use Marcelo Polanco as an example. He gets this horse from South America, and they tell him, right off the plane, you got to run the horse in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. And it's a really tough race to begin with. So, she runs in that race. She runs poorly. And then he gives the horse time off over the winter, lets her acclimate. And she's come back and run three terrific races, two wins and a close second. I mean, he's made every right move with her once he's been given the chance to train her as he wants to train her. And, that's just an example of what can go on if you give someone other than, the six people who get every horse a horse that can run.
Yep. No, we make this point forever. It's... Everybody's just waiting, trying to get a chance to showcase their ability. And Jay, the real challenge, of course, not only is there getting that horse, but then, it's a high wire act handling that horse. It's not like a big outfit where if one gets sidelined and needs, 60, 90, 120 days or whatever, when you've got, just that one big horse in the first stall, if the horse gets nicked up and suddenly people, this is why you got to give your horse to the big outfits. Well, come on. It's not fair. It's not fair to use that canvas to paint guys in a corner and gals.
Yeah, I don't. Like I said, I just, you know, there's a lot of people back there who are, you know, very good and just need a chance. And I'm glad, you know, some of them got to shine last weekend at Del Mar.
Jay, we will look forward to getting together Friday and talking racing. All right.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on to talk about this. You know, I think a lot of people might think it's just sort of inside baseball and only involves a handful of people, but you know, we're the conduit to the public, and if our ability to convey information to the public is restricted, it affects everybody in the sport. And I hope everybody would understand the context of that and be rightly outraged at what the CHRB is attempting to do.
DRF Privman, everybody, Jay, as always, succinct and reasoned, and I appreciate it. And passionate. We love the passionate part.
It's what I do for a living, Steve. I'm not going to have somebody, you know, unnecessarily and illegally and inappropriately restricted. It just won't stand. I won't stand for it. It's just, you're not going to lie your way into restricting me or others' ability to do our jobs.
And that's greatly appreciated. Jay Privman, everybody, and we will talk to Jay on Friday. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. We've got Sid Fernando joining us and Bill Gallo and Seth Merrow for the big third hour. This morning has ripped by. Stay with us. 60 minutes more. SiriusXM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual